Goeiemôre, my naam is Pearlie Joubert. Ek is baie sleg om voor mense te praat. Ek het geen idee hoekom Elmarie my vra nie. Saam met my is Johan Boysen, wat 100 keer al gefeier is en gearresteer is. Hy was die hoof van die Hawks in KwaZulu-Natal. En dan is Faikie Mentor ook hier. Sy het een baie lang geskiedenis in die ANC en was een minister en was die eerste whistleblower, wel nie die eerste nie, maar van die eerste whistleblowers rondom state capture. Ek gaan bietjie in Afrikaans en in Engels praat, as het okay is. The title of the conversation is False Friends, and maybe by way of introduction I can just tell briefly how my own experience with false friends. I left after 30 years of being a journalist, I left my job at the Sunday Times investigative unit after my friends at the newspaper published a whole series of stories over many months that now in retrospect we know were all fake news around the South African Revenue Service and aimed at hollowing out SARS of the leadership and the investigators. I met Johan very shortly after that when he phoned me and he said he wanted to come and see me because the people I worked with, my investigative unit at the Sunday Times, was not only responsible for being the wrecking ball of the South African Revenue Service, but also were the same group of men who wrote the stories that led to Anwar Dramat, the head of the Hawks, losing his job, Robert McBride, head of IPED, who lost his job and now has lost it again, and accused Johan Boysen of running a death squad in KwaZulu-Natal, as we now know after 9, 8, 10 court cases is all false news. So I want to start with Faikie, who in June 2016 walked at about 10 o'clock at night into the Durbanville police station. She asked to speak to Major General Jeremy Veery, who is in the audience here. And she said she urgently wants to talk to him, and I'm going to read to you a short extract of what happened. So in June, a month after Faikie Mentor had sat through the night with the SAPS captain laboriously penning an 18-page affidavit, which was to form part of the Public Protector's State of Capture report, head of the Hawks, St. Lemeza, denied that the unit was investigating three ministers that Faikie mentioned in her affidavit, and that they were directly linked to the Gupta family. This was a very peculiar denial, as it was the police commissioner himself, Khomotsu Patlane, who some of you might have read the paper yesterday and know that he was now arrested, who ordered Jeremy Veery, then Deputy Western Cape Provincial Commissioner for Detective Services, to personally hand Mentor's affidavit to Ntlemeza. A month later, Veery and Major General Peter Jacobson, the province's crime intelligence boss, were both suddenly demoted. What gives? Marianne Tom wrote in the Daily Maverick. So, Faikie, it would be good for you to start telling us your journey, making that affidavit, and through the years, where very recently you were at the Zondo Commission, and your take on false friends.
Thank you very much. It is a great honor and pleasure to be participating in this panel today. Firstly, I must issue a disclaimer that I was not a minister. I've not been a minister. The highest office I occupied was chairing the public enterprises portfolio, parliamentary portfolio committees.
Sorry.
Yeah. Yes, thanks. It has not been an easy journey. And what culminated as my visit to the Durbanville police station that day had been preceded by a painstaking, lonely journey of assessing what was going on in the country, remembering what hope we had as a nation, remembering all the sacrifices that South Africans across the board made, others paying the supreme sacrifice. That day did not come easy. It has been, it was preceded by agonizing, not for months, but for years. That agonizing actually began in serious terms in December 2007. Just post the ANC conference. There were signs. And there were signs that things were going out of hand. And historically, if you have belonged to the ANC, you don't break rank easily. But one thing that we were taught in the ANC many years ago is what we joined the ANC as a vehicle to serve the people and the country, not as just to belong to a party. So it was an agonizing journey to decide to break rank, to say, is it the ANC that I'm going to choose, or is it the Republic and the people that I'm going to choose? Am I willing to take this dangerous journey and this dangerous move? Because I was going on a war path against the head of state and the whole state machinery. What comforted me was that I knew that in the system there were still good people. Good people like Major General Viri and others. In fact, I counted myself lucky that when I took the decision, I was in the Western Cape. Because having scanned the law enforcement agencies and the criminal justice system across the country, I had seen how it had become compromised. But I knew that there were still pockets of excellence in the country. And I knew that, I hoped that when I lay charges in the Western Cape, there was a high probability that they would be attended to without fear, favor, or prejudice. But it was not to be, because as we know now, nothing has happened to that effort to date. Although after many attempts, I only met my original statement through the Zondo Commission. Again, also because of actions by remnants of people in the compromised law enforcement agencies that are still true to the Republic and that I'm still true to the people, never mind the odds.
Was it worth it for you to go and make your statement? Are you now looking back and everything that has happened to you, the experience in front of the Zondo Commission where there was aspersions cast on your, on whether you to be trusted and believed, do you still, if it was possible to go back and make that decision again, would you do it again?
I would do it again. Okay. It has not been easy, but I would do it again. I underestimated the wrath that would be that I would be subjected to, but even having gone through what I've gone through, I would still do it for the sake of this country and for the sake of the people.
Johan, me and Faiki come from a world where we are used to undercover, underground, subterfuge, other agendas. You are Afrikaans-speaking Boerkind van die KwaZulu-Natal, and you're a career policeman. And then you were accused on the front page of the biggest Sunday newspaper in the country of running a death squad, which in South Africa kind of harks back to Vlakplaas, where interestingly enough I worked at Vrye Weekblad when those stories broke with Dirk Coetzee. That brings back images for all South Africans about black people being killed, being tortured, being burnt alive. Tell us about that. And how, tell us about that journey of being the face of running a death squad, of killing a lot of, you were charged with 18 counts of murder.
I'll get you the indictment now.
Yeah. En jy kan Afrikaans praat.
Ja, ek het net vir Faitjie gesê, I've done a couple of these with the book launches, and normally I do it in English. So I'm going to do it in Afrikaans because I suspect the majority of the people here are Afrikaans speaking.
Yeah,
if
fine.
I mix my language every now and then with the technical terms, just forgive me because I've done 99% of these talks in English. Ja, Pearl, het was een mooie saam en een lang pad geweest. Ek meen, ek is op daai stadium met 35 jaar dienst in die politie gehad, onbesproke loopbaan gehad. Ek het een hele paar toekennings ontvang, plaaslik en internationaal, en skielik lees je op die voorblad van die korant, jy is die leier van een moordbende. Aanvankelijk het ek nie veel daarvan gemaakt nie, en ek het vir die ouwens gesê wat in die korant genoem het, dis maar soos enig ander korantstory, dit sal mettertyd oorwaai. Maar ek het vannacht achtergekom, het gaan nie oorwaai nie, en toe die onderzoek begin is na die ouwens wat sogenaamd onder my gewerk het, het ek weldra achtergekom, die onderzoek gaan nie oor hulle nie, die onderzoek is op my gefokus. Daar het een paar goed gebeur. Mense het my kom sien, mense wat in die verlede verklarings gemaakt het, waar mense geskiet was, waar hulle genader was om hulle verklarings te verander. Die nationale hoof op daai stadium was generaal Anwar Dramat geweest. Ek het my bekommernis met hom gedeel. Ek glo nie, hy het aanvanklik homself besef wat aan die gang was nie. Want hy het ook, mettertyd het hy ook een slagoffer geword van dieselfde kabal, ek noem hulle kabal. Die 11de December 2011 het Sunday Times uitgekom met die berig dat ek die leier is van die doodsbende. Vir die van julle die Sunday Times lees, ek het vir 6 jaar nie gelees nie, of gekoop nie. Trouwens, ek het elke keer as ek in die winkel instap in die Sunday Times gesien, dan vat ek al die Afrikaanse rapport, dan pak ek hulle op die Sunday Times. Dis my klein bydrae gewees, terwyl het werd was. Maar nie te min, tot hulle my nou verskoning gevra het, ek dink is November laas jaar.
Dan Lucky, ek het nog nooit 'n onverskoning gekry nie.
Toe het hulle my geleentheid gebied om 'n hele bladsy te skryf wat ek gedoen het, ongeredigeerd, en hulle het ook hulle eie stukkie geskryf, redaksionele kommentaar wat hulle aangebied het, ek kan
redigeer.
Ek is gelukkig geweest met hulle verskoning, so die twee artikels het net so verskyn. Sedertdien het daar baie water in die see geloop, ek kan dalk net 'n bietjie praat hoe die ding begin het, maar ek het nou so 3 weke terug het ek by die Mgoro kommissie getuig by die Jiba disciplinaire verhoor, En ek behoort binnen die volgende 2-3 weke behoort ek by die Zondo-commissie te getuig. Ek so getuig het toe agressie getuig het, my het in beseringstijd te gaan, so het ons allemaal bykie verder teruggeskuif.
Kan ek gauw vinnig die ding wat jylle twee link, en miskien vir ons al drie link, vir my op 'n ander manier as 'n journalist, is dat jy het op mense se tone getrap. You stepped on people's toes that was directly related to state capture. And I'm not one for euphemisms, which was directly related to Jacob Zuma and the people closest to him. Can you just briefly tell us, for those people who hasn't read your book and who also stopped reading the Sunday Times, who were those people? And at what stage did you piss off somebody too close to Zuma or his inner circle or his son or Jeff Radebe or whoever it is that you got too close to?
Ja, dit is moeilik om dit saam te vat. En ek gaan dit saamvat deur 'n aanhaling in die boek uit te maak wat nou in Engels is. Iemand het by op 'n stadium gevra waaroor gaan die hele storie. Nou, aanvanklik kon ek nie, ons het eers later kon ons die in Engels sê, we started to link the dots. It takes a couple of protagonists with different agendas, counter agendas, add to it a few useful idiots, and you have a couple of circling sharks, and that gives you the recipe for a perfect storm, and that's a storm that I found myself in for almost 5 years. So aanvanklik kon ek nie lekker uitmaak wat die story is nie. Okay, nou weet ons precies na paar jaar wat in gang was. My probleem het begin met 'n ondersoek na ons eie, my eie baas, ja, die provinsiale commissaris in KwaZulu-Natal, generaal in Kobeni. En aanvanklik was het maar een gewone korruptieonderzoek geweest, maar dit het te gaan oor een besigheidsman in KwaZulu-Natal, Toshan Pandey. Met die tyd het ons uitgevind dat hy het verbintenisse met die vorige staatspresident Jacob Zuma. Jacob Zuma se neef Debo Mzobi, wat in beheer was van die Friends of Zuma Fund, is sy direkte neef. Edward Zuma, sy seun, was een van sy vennote gewees. So wat gebeur, en Mzobi ook, was ook van Pandey vennoot gewees. So die aanvanklike ondersoek het gegaan oor akkommodasie, betaling van akkommodasie vir die ontplooiing van polisiebeamtes in KwaZulu-Natal tydens die 2010 Wêreldbeker Sokker. En ek binne week na die ons die ondersoek begin het, nou aanvanklik was het so 15 miljoen, maar toe vind ons uit is eindelijk 60 miljoen gewees, wat die besigheidsman in 8 maande uit die polisie het gekry het. Wel 45 miljoen was uitbetaal, en ek het 15 miljoen gestop, en ek dink dis waar my probleem begin het. Toe kreeg ek 'n besoek van Edward Zuma in my kantoor, waar hy my versoek het om die 15 miljoen rand vry te stel. Toe ek van gesê, gaan dit nie doen nie, want as ek ook nou deel van die korrupte spul, en hy is toe daar weg. Daar is verskeie pogings gewees om die ondersoek te kelder. Onder andere, hy het ons hof toe gevat, het dan verloor hy die saak. En so Augustus, daai jaar, nee, Julie, toe word ek genader deur een van die kolonelle in die polisie, wat die verbintenisse gehad het met Edward Zuma en Toshan Pandey. Toe het hulle aangebied om my om te koop, is ek 'n sekere dokument in die ondersoek vervals. En dit het die potensiaal gehad om my hele ondersoek te kelder. Ek het toe dadelik terme van die strafproseswet, ek weet nie vir die regsmense hier, is in artikel 252 aansoek gedoen, by die vervolgingssaak om, ek weet nie wat die korrekte woord in Afrikaans is, nie, stingoperasie te doen. Ek het die ou toe seker so 7-8 keer ontmoet, hy het toe aangebied om my 2 miljoen rand te betaal, as ek nou die document vir hulle sal vervals. En op die ou eind van die dag het ons nou gereël, hulle gaan nou 1.5 miljoen in my kar se kattebak sit, en dan die balans sal die middag betaal, sodra ek die document vir hulle oorhandig het. Hulle het die 1.5 miljoen in my kattebak gesit, ek het document vir hulle gegee, en net daarna het ons vir die kolonel gearresteer, Toshan Pandey is daarna gearresteer.
That was all filmed, by the way.
Yes.
Yeah.
Ek het al so video gehad.
Ja. Yeah.
Ons het toe, en ek het dit nou maar noem, maar dit is intussen tyd, dit in die came into the public domain, waar ons het hulle, ons taal, ek sit met een van my collega's hier, Brigadier Pieterse, ons praat van ons haak die lijne, Fakie, that's in apartheid time when we listen to your calls. We used to call Zaak die lijne.
I see.
Yeah, so, yeah, we call it Act 70 interceptions. So we had legal Act 70 interceptions in place, signed off by a judge. We were listening to their communication. So we knew exactly where the money came from and how it came to my office. And after I arrested them, net was hulle klaar gearresteer, toe maak toe champagne, want toe kom die kolonel nie terug met die document nie. En hy is angstig, want hy het net 2 miljoen rand na my kantoor toegestuur. So hy soek of sy 2 miljoen rand terug, of hy soek ten minste die dokument. Toe het hy verskeie oproepe gemaak na senior politie officier toe, maar onder andere na Diebo Mzobe toe, die staatspresident se neef. En daar het hulle bespreek dat Boysen's wings will be clipped. Wel, op daai tyd is ek by die valk gewees, is 'n goeie woordspel om te sê, my wings will be clipped. En dit is waar my sorge begin het. Aanvanklik, soos ek sê, en dieselfde foto's wat hulle gebruik het om my te probeer afpers in die poging om my om te koop. Ek weet ook wat die omkoper het, toe die 1,5 miljoen rand in my kattebak getel is, toe is daar net 1,43 miljoen. So hulle my bietjie geshortchange ook daar so. Nou weet ek wat gebeur het, want ons het, when we were listening to the communication and deceptions, Tosh and Panda handed him the money at the Japanese gardens next to the harbor by the sea. And on his way to my office, Tosh and Panda phoned him and told him to stop the car. And so he stopped the car and he said, okay, what do we have to do now? He says, go and wipe the suitcase. Obviously he wanted to have his fingerprints removed from the suitcase. And that might be there where my dude might have decided, well, while I'm wiping the suitcase, I might help myself as well. But be that as it may, so the same photographs that they tried to bribe me with, those were the same photographs that the Sunday Times produced. And I had a discussion with, well, they were going to actually publish the article the Sunday. I got wind of the story, and we made contact with Roy Hartley at the time, who was the editor of the Sunday Times, and we insisted that I'd been given opportunity to state my case. What they were going to do is, hulle sê my die saterdag aand gebel het, die story is klaar geskryf. Mm. They were going to phone me on the Saturday evening and then give me the opportunity.
Net as het was laat.
Ja. Yeah. So it was supposed to have appeared the week before. Stefan Hofstadter van die Sunday Times in Mzulukazi, Wa-Afrika. Stefan came to my office and Wa-Afrika was on the phone. We had a phone conference. It was clear to me that the story had been written. They're not going to deviate from that. It later became clear through our investigations. It was a crime intelligence initiative. And I expound that with that in court papers, in my book, etc. So...
Can I interrupt you? Can we talk a bit about intelligence, crime intelligence, and the kind of nexus between using a newspaper and some journalists, not all, to start a fake news agenda that has absolutely devastated institutions in our country and individuals. I mean, it has led to, Jeremy Veery is still at the coalface of the use and the abuse between intelligence, whether, I mean, I would call it rogue intelligence, because it can't possibly be, I'm not cynical enough to say that it's everybody, that a rogue group of intelligence operatives becomes so powerful, goes to a newspaper or a group of journalists to publish something that will devastate individuals and institutions in our country. And that's what happened to you. Your experience of that, who were inside the ANC, and how does that work? How does that work? Is it a Is it politicians who have friends in crime intelligence? Is it a convergence of agendas? Or do you think that this is an orchestrated, certain people has to be contaminated or smeared to get rid of them?
I think it's a function of rogue intelligence officers, but also people that have given themselves the mandate to illegally collect intelligence. So you have a whole number of forces.
To benefit who? And you speak about your specific kind of, when you blew the whistle on the Guptas taking you to their house, offering you a job, a minister's job, when you were the chair of the portfolio committee, what was at play there?
I mean, the Sunday Times, Mzilikazi Africa specifically, did not even begin to report when I blew the whistle. Just when I landed from China after having refused to see Zuma in China, he called me. And he called me and said, you have used Transnet money to travel to China on a private personal mission. So at that time, I took it lightly. I didn't know. These things become much clearer with time.
In retrospect.
Yeah. In retrospect, yes. So, for instance, Mcebisi Jonas is on record publicly saying that the Guptas, when they wanted him to become the Minister of Finance, when they promised him 60,000 rand immediately and 600 million later, they told him that they've been collecting intelligence on him. They don't have a mandate to collect intelligence, but they do. But they also have people in the establishment that have a mandate to collect intelligence that cooperate with them. So, in fact, in my book, I have dedicated a chapter on the use of media to vilify people that are upright, that are doing their job, that are anti-corruption. So it's, I don't think that it's a strategy that began now. I think it has been used all the time, but it has become increasingly used to benefit the project of state capture.
So is your take on that it's still ongoing?
It's still ongoing. Read the Sunday Times tomorrow and tell me if you think it's not ongoing.
Johan, wat is jouw take op die gebruik van intelligentie en die politie?
Ek dink wat jy die een vraag eerste antwoord.
Ja.
Die wortel van alle kwaad is geld.
Ja.
Het gaan als oor geld, like your problem is all about money. Because if you have power, you call the shots, you get the tenders, and that's what it's about. Het gaan net oor geld. Selfverryking, dis waar het gaan. There are three stories that are inextricably linked. SARS rogue story, Kate Mana death squad, and the Anwar Dramat rendition story. The chopper for me.
It's them.
Yes. You know, you talk like that. When they were busy with this investigation against us, and we expected something to happen, and it's actually a joke. We laugh about it now. So one of these Indian guys that worked with me, they knew that they were coming for us. So one day they were sitting there, and a chopper flew over there. It was very, very low, but they were outside. So he says, they're looking for us. They all ran inside the house. So I've flown in the chopper a lot in my life. It's not very that easy to see someone from the chopper. Terug te kom na jou vraag te Pearly. Die drie stories, soos ek sê, in my case, they were all linked. En die centrale figuur daar, boonbehalwe die media wat hulle gebruik het, was die intelligensiedienste gewees. Ek wil nie my getuienis by sonde vooruitloop nie, maar wat ek wel kan noem nou hierso, wat al reeds in openbare domein is, is dat Richard Ngluli, wat hoof was van misdaad intelligensie, is agter my storie gewees. Ek kan 'n bewys, ek het die dokumentasie, en ek het dit al reeds bewys. En dit gaan oor die die geheime fonds wat hulle miljoene rande geplunder het. Nathi Mtetwa, en ek sê het nie openbaar, ek het hom nodig op 702 aangevat. He made 190,000, that what we are aware of, they built a fence around his house at his private residence to the tune of 190,000 rand. So he, now Nathi Mtetwa controversially appointed Richard Ngluli, the then head of the police at the time, Tim Williams, had lots to say about it because it was irregular to have appointed him at the time. So sy aanstelling was onreëlmatig gewees. Hulle begin die geheime fonds te plunder, miljoene rande. Geld het ons veronderstel is om te gebruik om georganiseerde misdaad te bekamp.
Gebruik hulle, by the way, taxpayers geld.
Ons geld, ja.
Dis ons geld.
Wat hulle toe gebruik vir oorseese vakansies, hulle stel agente aan. En daar is vandag nog van hulle wat werk. Ek ken hulle persoonlik. Wat kolonelle se salarisse kry, wat by die huise sit. Party van hulle weet nie waar is 'n polisiestasie nie, maar hulle kry 'n kolonel se salaris. Ek ken hulle persoonlik en ek weet daarvan.
So can I quickly interject as an interesting aside? So when I arrived at the Sunday Times, I didn't want to be part of the investigative unit because I work with the investigative unit at the Mail and Guardian, and I find investigations quite macho, kind of the domain of men, because, you know, finance and politics are the domain of men. We have to write about, I don't know what, diets or something.
You have to report on fashion?
Yes.
Are you ganging up here?
So when the editor said to me, I want you to work with the investigative unit, I first said, no, I don't want to. But anyway, it wasn't multiple choice. So the very first month I was there, we had a Borsberaad. So the Borsberaad is all the senior journalists of the Sunday Times. We all met. I flew up to Johannesburg. We met somewhere and we were talking about strategy, and it was interesting. It's all the kind of the heads of the finance and investigations and news and Joburg and National. So there's probably 200 people there. And I arrived there right in the middle of Glynis Breitenbach leaving the NPA and being pushed out of the NPA. And what I couldn't understand, and I asked this at this Borsberaad, I said, why haven't you written anything about this? Because the reason why Glynis Breitenbach left, by the way, is because of Richard Ngluli. So I then made a suggestion. I said, so most of the people in that room didn't know me because I never worked for mainstream journalism in all my life. I came from Vrye Weekblad, and then I worked for years for BBC and Al Jazeera and did television news. So this is my first time I'm meeting establishment journalists. And I made a suggestion. I said, why don't we pool all our best resources for a month and go after Richard Ngluli? We just focus on him. The finance people follow the money, the investigations. Do the murder he was accused of, where he killed his girlfriend's husband. And Mziwa Afrika, who was my colleague, got up and left when I said this. So I thought maybe he's just going to go and have a wee or going to the toilet or something. I don't know. In retrospect, it was so fascinating that he left the room. Right then, and Richard Ngluli was like a shadow, you mentioned him, behind a whole lot of stories, and he was crime intelligence head.
What made him powerful was the fact that, and that's I think one thing that these people learned from the previous dispensation with what we used to call Stratcom.
Like what, from the Buddha?
Yeah.
Ja. Ja.
Hulle het nie alles geleer nie.
Hulle het baie mooi geleer, al die kak geleer.
Was geleer.
Ja. So, wat vir Richard en Doelie mag gegee het, wat gebeur het is, generaal Mark Henkel was die vlijkie blazer gewees met die slush fund. Hulle het miljoene gesteel. Toe, op die stadium, toe is die huidige minister Bekkie Cele, toe is hy die nationale commissaris. En dit het hy van my persoonlik gesê. Toe gaan, toe die korruptie ding uitkom, toe gaan Shadrick Sebeya, en hulle maak die moordsaak ook, heropen die moordsaak. En Shadrick Sebeya weet ons, is ook al gearresteer en toegesluit en geskors en
yeah, well, he was falsely accused yes. of being involved in the illegal rendition of the Zimbabweans.
Toe gaan Richard and Glory na Bekkie Cele toe en hy sê vir my met die ondersoeke toemaak. Hy toe geweier. En toe verskyn daar 'n dokument, julle kan dit maar gaan Google, the ground coverage dokument. Dis nou so 'n hele spioen storie waar Bekkie Cele en 'n klomp politici vir Jacob Zuma sou ontsetel in 'n tipe van 'n staatsgreep. Maar die dokument was gefabriseer gewees deur 'n persoon wat ek geïdentifiseer het, wat uiteindelik die bron vir die Sunday Times was. Is 'n kolonel gewees, N.H. Singh, hy is nou oorlede. Ek word ook in die dokument genoem. Toe stuur hy KwaZulu-Natal hierdie dokument na Mdluli, toe die hoof is van intelligensie, hy en die classify die dokument, en hy gaan na Jacob Zuma toe, en hy sê van, sien wat hy busy was. Toevallig daai tyd, toe is die Rusho Bango story in die gang, met die gebouwe met Bekkie Cele. Oh. Ek glo, en dit is my persoonlijke opinie, as dit nie vir die ground coverage dokument was nie, sou die Rusho Bango ding nie Bekkie Cele se einde beteken het in die, as nationale commissaris nie. He probably would have gotten a slap on the yeah. wrist. So that was a very convenient thing to get rid of him. Toe is Bekkie nou die pad uit. Terselfde tyd was ek ook besig met die Natalse been, oor die KwaZulu-Natalse been van die ondersoek met die geheime fonds. Maar dit is waar Mdluli toe nou sy speletjies begin het, want hy toe vir Zuma gesê, look what they're busy with, and in the event of, as hy nou inkom, that was the one prior to the previous one, where they had the ANC conference,
Mangaung,
yeah, that's right. Dis waar hy toe van gesê, as hy inkom, sal hy wat Mdluli is agter sy belange omsien.
So that's how Richard Mdluli ensured that he will have Jacob Zuma's backing forever, because he said, I have protected you against the... Okay.
Yeah.
Shall we open? How much time? When do we have to finish? Is there any... Sê geweer? Is daar ek het gehoor, dankie. Is daar vraag van iemand? Meneer moet glo op die mikrofoon praat, anders kan ons nie hoor nie.
Dankie mevrou, ek sal.
Yes, hallo meneer.
Jobert. Hallo mevrou. Luister, twee goeietjies. Eerstens, ek sit hier vir julle en luister en iets word vir my duidelik. Nou, ons allemaal dra ons letsels met ons mee en ons allemaal deel blijkbaar diezelfde publikatie wat die letsels toegedien het, maar in elk geval die waarheid sal jou vry maak. Mevrou Mentor, die keer wat ek by u die hele dag was, nadat u die verklaring ingedien het in Durbanville, verstaan ek nou uiteindelik miskien die onwilligheid van die Sunday Times om die berig te publiseer. Want ek is mos van EAF na die Durbanville polisiestasie toe. Onthou, ek moes heen en weer rij, want hulle wou nie die berig publiseer nie.
So Janjan is saying that he now understands better the Sunday Times unwillingness to publish the story because he was driving backwards and forwards.
Yes, between your house and Cape Town, you'll remember. I couldn't get the story published and I couldn't understand why. And the only angle they were interested in, ek sien nie vir Jeremy nie, maar as hy so is.
Daar is hy.
Wel, Jeremy, die enigste ding waarin hulle belang gestel het, as 'n hoek op hierdie reuse verhaal van mevrou Mentor, en mevrou Mentor is fyn met Afrikaans, ek weet dit, so ek gaan dit net aanhou praat, dat die enigste hoek waarin hulle belang gestel het, was nie gewees dat mevrou Mentor by die Guptas was nie. Dit was nie gewees dat sy 3 ministers geïmpliseer het, skriftelik nie. Dit was net gewees dat Jeremy Weary het nou beheer oorgeneem van hierdie ondersoek. En ek kon nie die berig gepubliseer kry nie, mevrou sal onthou. Dit was eers nadat dit in die City Press gehardloop het, 3 weke later, dat die Sunday Times enige belangstelling getoon het. So leer ons as ons met mekaar praat. Maar my vraag is dit, en Jeremy, dit moet vir jou ook interessant wees, want ek dink hulle sou reguit vir jou gegaan het. Ek het op die ou end geweier om die berig te skryf soos hulle dit wou hê, en ek dink dit het maar gelei tot 'n hele klomp ander goed wat mens op 'n ander dag kan bespreek. Maar, die vraag wat ek sou hê, as 'n Suid-Afrikaner wat belasting betaal soveel ek kan, en wat toch maar bekommerd is oor die land se toekoms, is dit. Julle vertel 'n verskriklike verhaal. Die mense wat betrokke is, sit nie onder nie, hulle sit bo. Is daar hoop?
So he's basically just effectively asking you that in retrospect, Jan-Jan couldn't understand. Mm. He was, for those of you that don't know, Jan-Jan was also working at the Sunday Times. Mm. He's also now ex, like me. Mm. He couldn't understand why he couldn't get your story published, and the only angle that the Sunday Times were interested in was not the fact that you mentioned Lynn Brown, Rob Davies, and
Nosipiwe
Ngakula in your affidavit as being with the Guptas and directly kind of influenced by them, but that the only angle the Sunday Times were interested in publishing was the fact that you went to go and see Major General Jeremy Weary, and he refused to alter his story, and then it wasn't published, and they only published, I don't know what version of it, 3 weeks after the City Press wrote about your affidavit.
Yes, in fact...
And then he's asking, is there any hope? Really?
In fact, even at that time, I would refuse to speak to the Sunday Times because I knew their agenda. And I would only agree to speak to a particular journalist in the Sunday Times that I knew was honest. That the journalist would not report in my favor, but would report objectively. So that one journalist in the Sunday Times was Jan-Jan Hubert. And then, in fact, when they dealt with Jan-Jan later, I felt so guilty. So I was wondering whether Jan-Jan is falling also because they would try and send me whichever journalist in the Sunday Times. I would tell them I'm not talking to the Sunday Times. I will talk to one journalist only.
Well, what is interesting is after you spoke to Jeremy, a month later, Jeremy was demoted and was put on a trajectory that took him 2 years to get out of, and he's not out of it, and the head of intelligence, Peter Jacobson. After you spoke to Jan-Jan, I don't know what Jan-Jan's now doing, he's knitting for a job, I think. He's also left. So it is interesting, and it's not, I think, coincidental.
But let me correct something. I went to Durbanville police station to say to the commander of the police station, this is very serious and this is very heavy, and you would have to promise me that you will put it in the hands of people that are absolutely trustworthy.
Sure.
I spoke to him about how the law enforcement agencies have been compromised. And I said, I don't want to waste my time. If you are going to let anybody that's compromised handle whatever I'm bringing forward, I would rather not do it. So I did not specifically say, I want General Weary. I just said, I need honest people in the system to deal with this. So they actually fabricated the lie that I specifically wanted General Viri. I said I only need honest people that I can trust.
Okay. Is it there's a hand here.